Good morning, Sarasota. Welcome to the Surreal News Show. We have Maura Stevens in the studio today. Good morning, Maura.
Good morning, Steve.
Let's try that one more time. Good morning, Maura.
Good morning, Steve.
Uh-oh. We don't have a live mic there. Uh-oh. Maura, one more time, and then we'll do a quick switcheroo, change mics.
Good morning, Steve.
One more time.
Good morning, Steve.
All right, now I pushed the right button. Okay. Sorry about that, guys. Nice to have our guest Mike on. Maura Stevens has been a journalist, analyst, writer, peace advocate for many years.
Not that many. I'm
19
not that old.
Years.
I started and young.
We're really happy to have you in the studio. You've got some great stories about some of your trips to Iraq.
Yes, and the people that I speak with every day in Iraq.
Good. And we're going to go into all of those things. We have a lot of things to cover today. There's some late-breaking news we're going to start with this morning, and then we're going to get into your segment.
Okie doke.
Let's talk about some late-breaking news items. In the news, according to the LA Times, the North Pole could be ice-free by 2100, according to a new computer model.
That's not a very good piece of news, is it?
And time to buy your beachfront property in Kansas. Other things in the news, and we're going to get into Gonzalez. He was in the news this morning, actually March 15th, last night, according to Reuters, two more Republican congressmen called for attorney Alberto Gonzalez's to resign.
Yes, I'm not surprised.
Growing pressure, so we have a lot to report there. And then we also want to report that last night Duke lost in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Interest there? No, oh, my
well,
daughter
I'm
goes there.
I'm not too big on the sports.
Ouch. But for you Duke fans, it's the first time in decades that they lost in the first round.
Oh, gosh. I guess it's their turn then.
Whatever it is, it's too late for them. Their season is over. Other things in the late-breaking news, according to the AP, the National Archives sold 165 stolen Civil War documents on eBay, according to prosecutors.
I think that was an intern from the National Archives did that, right? It was caught?
That is correct.
That's what I heard.
Very good. All right, let's do a little fun, surreal news just to warm us all up here. Some news items which are a little less serious, because today we're going to be talking about a lot of really more serious items. Laura.
Yes, I'm afraid I'm usually not that much fun at parties.
Okay.
A lot of serious
Well, hopefully we'll have some fun this morning. You can expect some more delays in your flights, according to the FAA, for this year, if you're taking some flights, and I understand you do quite a bit of traveling yourself.
I do.
There's going to be, on average, 1.4 million more takeoffs and landings, the equivalent of traffic on two Dallas-Fort Worth international airports, more takeoffs and landings this year.
Wow, I wonder why the traffic is going up so much.
And by the way, if you're interested, the air traffic controllers in 2006 handled 61 million takeoffs and landings.
Wow, what a high-stress job that is.
And you could say that again. Yeah. I actually know some of the air traffic controllers personally, and indeed, it is a very highly stressful job.
Yes, terrible job. I hope they get paid well.
Not so much.
Probably not well
Maybe
enough.
Not. Another kind of interesting story here. There was a man who was in prison, and they found a stolen diamond in the prison shower. The gentleman's name was Brett Allen Langford, and apparently he pleaded innocent to stealing a diamond. It was a 2-carat colorless diamond. Claims he didn't have it, had been actually transferred from facility to facility, and apparently what he was doing was eating it, recovering it, eating it, recovering it. No, he missed. They found it in the shower this time. I guess your non-guilty status is going to be a little bit in question there. All right, did you hear about the divorce in Germany?
No.
So in Berlin, according to Reuters Life, a German man chainsawed his house in half in a divorce split. So we've heard a lot of good divorce stories. Here's another one. He's a 43-year-old man. He sort of carefully measured where half the house would be, took a chainsaw, cut the house in half, got a forklift and a forklift truck, took his half of the house away.
That's pretty Solomonic. Sounds.
What was the word you used?
Solomonic, like Solomon, you know?
Oh, okay. Well, we're going to get a vocabulary lesson this morning. I love it. Oh, so an Israeli envoy was fired after he was found drunk, naked, and tied up. And this is according to the AP, March 2nd. So the El Salvador police found Rafael, who is the ambassador from Israel, in that state. He was drunk, tied up, naked. He was wearing several sex toys at the time of his, when he was found. And he just told the police, I'm an ambassador. And Israel said, okay, you're fired. And this is actually, there's a recent plague of these kinds of problems with some Israeli diplomats. This is not just a single event. For example, in 2000, Israeli's ambassador to France died of cardiac arrest in a Paris hotel under circumstances the foreign military ministry refused to publicize. And according to reports, there was a woman with him that wasn't his wife.
Hmm.
And then also in 2005, Israel canceled appointments for a diplomat to Australia after the Israeli diplomat published pictures of nude Brazilian women on his internet site while in a mission in Brazil.
Wow, it's amazing what diplomatic immunity lets people get away with.
This is true. And I remember when I was living in New York City, the diplomatic people with diplomatic plates were getting their parking tickets and tickets all the time, and they were just ignoring them.
Right. Millions of dollars of parking tickets, apparently.
And also there were some other crimes which they were accused of that they were not charged with way back when. We're not going to report on those details today. When Bush went on his recent Latin American tour, his number one item, food. He apparently was asking for food. People were wondering, were we actually feeding our president? Because he kept asking for food in all these places. All right, well, that's it for some of the surreal news for today. And let's talk a little bit about Antony Gonzalez and the scandals there. And this is going to tie back into Maura Stevens, who's with us here in the studio. And let me just mention, it's 96.5. WSLR, Low Power FM in Sarasota, Florida. And low power does not mean low impact. And let's start also by telling our listeners, Maura, you are going to be giving a lecture later today, and then you're also going to be at the Peace Rally, which is Saturday at 1 o'clock at Marina Jacks Park down here. And I'll be there. You're going to be
Great.
Speaking, I hear. Tell us a little bit more about the talk that you'll be giving tonight.
Tonight is at the Sarasota Friends meeting, which is at 57th and Lockridge on the northwest corner of 57th and Lockridge. Everybody's welcome. You don't have to be a Quaker to come. A wonderful group of people. They've hosted me. I think this will be my fourth time coming since the beginning of the invasion 4 years ago. This weekend is the mark of the fourth anniversary of the invasion of Iraq.
A great group, and they've been promoting peace and peaceful activities straight along. The local Quakers have been doing a lot of good work in that area, and we certainly thank them for that. Now, Alberto Gonzalez, his head is definitely on the chopping block now. He's involved with several scandals, several which just came out recently. Where to start? And, of course, I always say Gonzalez, the torturer, because he was the one that helped stop habeas corpus and writing some of those laws and saying that some of our prisoners are not subject to the same rights as other people. In other
right.
words, they're not humans. So that's where we're going to end up here. Now, recently that came out in the news here, Gonzalez is going to be questioned about interfering with the NSA probe. And this is the internal investigation about the National Security Agency's wireless wiretapping program. And according to Senators Durbin, Kennedy, and Feingold, and Schumer, they sent a letter to Attorney Gonzalez questioning, and here's what we think is going on, that Bush and Gonzalez got together when this investigation was getting too close to Gonzalez. He was going to be investigated, and what they decided to do was to pull the security clearance on the attorneys who were investigating it so that it wouldn't end up pointing back to Gonzalez, kind of a fox guarding the hen house scenario here. And Gonzalez is definitely going to be in hot water over this one, but it gets worse. Also in the news, and that other one was according to the Senate Judiciary Committee yesterday at 7 o'clock at night, that story came out. According to ABC News, new emails came out that put Rove at the center of the attorney purge. And if you remember this kind of convoluted story about there's now attorneys which are responsible for various investigations in different states, and they were fired allegedly because the White House and Gonzalez were trying to get rid of those attorneys that were prosecuting Republicans and get rid of the attorneys that refused to have bogus investigations against Democrats. For example, there was one investigation that was supposed to come out right before the election about Democratic voter fraud. It was bogus. There was no evidence. There was no reason. There was no probable cause for any type of investigations or any types of arrests. However, the attorneys that said, we're not going to investigate it, there's nothing there, got fired in addition to the other attorneys. And it turns out that Karl Rove was involved with this and Gonzalez was involved with this before he became the U.S. Attorney General while he was still the general counsel for Bush himself.
Right, and does this surprise anyone?
Well, it's surprising to Congress because when now Attorney General Gonzalez was testifying before Congress with his hand up in the air under sworn testimony, he said that that was not the case. And Bush administration emails contradict the sworn testimony, according to the Washington Post, March 15th. This came out yesterday morning. That in testimony on January 18th, Attorney General Gonzalez assured the Senate Judiciary Committee that the Justice Department had no intention of avoiding Senate input on the hiring and firing of U.S. attorneys. Just a month earlier, Kyle Sampson, this is a name, okay, he was then the chief of staff of Gonzalez, laid out a plan to do just what he said that they wouldn't do, that they were going to fire these U.S. attorneys based on one factor and one factor only. Remember what that was?
I think they were...
Loyalty to Bush,
right,
was the term. I serve at the pleasure of the president.
And now these people are finally speaking up, too, apparently. These attorneys are...
2-year plan, and the attorneys were subpoenaed. That subpoena did go through with Schumer. And Leahy was involved, and I can't tell you which one actually did that. But they will be subpoenaed. And then what was interesting is that Gonzalez came out and said, well, we may or may not let these attorneys and other people, other staff members, testify. And the response was, it's not your place to decide. We'll subpoena them ourselves, thank you, and did. And
that's
they,
one
and they
good
did
thing,
get
yeah.
Subpoenaed.
Well, you think his head is going to fall? How soon?
Wow. Me? Ooh. I just report it.
Okay.
Now we have in the late breaking news that two more Republicans have come out calling for Gonzalez's resignation. And it's kind of interesting. We're sort of getting to the heart of Bush here. We have Rumsfeld, who's gone. He was sort of Bush's heart and soul. That was took a long time to get rid of him. Libby, who's gone, and Cheney is sort of being tied up in that purge there, although many people say that Fitzgerald didn't go far enough and actually didn't get to the heart of things and been criticizing Fitzgerald, who also came out and said that he's not going to testify in front of Congress about the leaks. And now we have Gonzalez the torturer, another key figure. Rice has also been getting a lot of bad press recently. Across the board, the Republican administration has been losing confidence in the eyes of Republicans and also had in the eyes of many in the United States as well.
Well, Bush's approval ratings are at the lowest ever, and people seem to be finally waking up to what a crooked administration this is.
Yes, and if you take the family members and the administrators and subtract us off that off from his approval rating, it comes out in the negative numbers. All right, so Gonzalez the torturer was involved in setting up the law that was passed that did away with habeas corpus. I imagine that you have a few comments about that.
I do. I've written about torture extensively. In fact, in the summer of 2003, when my husband George and I were in Iraq, and things were still seeing that things might get better in Iraq. This was in July and August of 2003, just after the invasion, 2 months after the president declared that the war was over, mission accomplished. We met with a group of humanitarians from Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch who were already making a report to the U.S. government about the abuses of people within Abu Ghraib and elsewhere.
Yes, and we had Jay Furr from Amnesty International was on our show talking about that.
Talking about that, how early it was. And then it took another 18 months before these allegations really saw the light of day. And it was only because of the photographs from Abu Ghraib that any media attention was, any corporate media attention was paid to this.
Yes, and let me just step in here. It got a lot of press in Europe.
Yes.
And almost nothing here in the United States. It was amazing, the dichotomy of to see the difference between what was reported around the rest of the world and here in the United States.
Right. Well, that's true for almost everything still to this day. The rest of the world gets news that we don't see because our media are primarily controlled by corporations.
Except this show.
Except this show and a number of other great independent media outlets. But they are not the mainstream, and people, for the most part, seem to be getting their information primarily from the conglomerates, which I don't really understand with the Internet.
It's called laziness.
I think it's called laziness and indifference and willful ignorance.
Since you mentioned it, it is changing. Many newspapers are going under, have their heads on the chopping block. The New York Times, the L.A. Times, the list goes on, some of the news magazines as well. And more people are now turning to the blogs and the Internet. And now these newspapers have launched Internet sites to try to pick up some of that traffic. Oh, wait, in any case, go on.
Right. Well, that's another whole conversation. The whole media reform movement is luckily growing. Nevertheless, it does seem that the majority of people get their information from the conglomerates still. Maybe that will change in the next few years.
Which is not censored in any way. Not.
Not. Anyway, the abuse of power and the torture and mistreatment of human beings is going on now with the sanction of the United States government, and that's pretty horrifying. I interviewed in 2005. I was back at the border of Iraq and Jordan, and I was interviewing 24 families, 24 people, many of them families, who were trying to get over the border to Jordan to get some relief from their hellish daily lives. And among the people I interviewed was a man who had been tortured in Abu Ghraib.
When you say they're trying to get across the border, are they trying to leave Iraq?
Trying to leave, yes.
Permanently?
Yes.
Okay.
Either permanently or temporarily for a respite. I'll get into that in a minute, but this gentleman had been tortured and quite horrifically, and he had scars around his body and showed us some of the scars. And the description of what he underwent.
I could hear your voice is, we're kind of losing, it's kind of cracking up a little bit.
It's pretty horrible.
See that firsthand, to see the scars.
Yeah.
And we reported some of those scars were in personal parts, your private parts, for some people. That was also reported on Democracy Now. Horrific things. They did torture people. Of course, in Abu Ghraib by Saddam Hussein, but also at the hands of the United States.
Yes, and that to me, I think that once you start being brutal to your fellow human being, it becomes acceptable. And once you start, the same is true for killing. Once you kill one person, it becomes easier.
Isn't it amazing that
it is.
Most Americans feel that we have the higher moral ground, therefore it's okay to torture? That somehow the logic is missing, that just because they think that we have the higher moral ground, of course only in their own minds, that then it's okay for us to torture. This is not logic. I mean, if you have the higher moral ground, you don't need to torture. You don't.
Right. Well, people look at other people as subhuman. In fact, all of the people in Guantanamo Bay are Muslim men. And it's okay to look at them as less than human for some American people. When I speak to progressive groups these days, I'm kind of horrified to hear how many people will say to me, oh, they're Iraqis, they don't want democracy, just let's get out of there and let them have at one another because they don't know any better. We look at them as less than human, and yet their stories are, people are just like us, you know, they want their kids to go.
Yeah, so here's a comment by somebody I know and like, a very close friend, said, those Iraqi babies may grow up to become torturers, therefore we're justified in killing them now before they come over here and kill us.
Isn't that amazing? And that person probably volunteers at her church or, takes care of an elderly mother. Yes.
Humanitarian type of person. Getting back to this person that you saw the scars on their body. Now, did they tell you, I'm innocent, I didn't do anything? You know, what did they say? I mean, they didn't. To your knowledge, they weren't involved with any kind of terrorism against anybody?
No, not at all. He was a, just a regular shop owner who, he doesn't know, and I can't speculate as to why he was picked up in the first place.
A lot of people were just picked up by mercenaries and people, bounty hunters. They got money. They picked up somebody. They got paid. They didn't care who they picked up.
That's true. And many families, homes were invaded for no apparent reason as well. This man had been so brutalized and so traumatized, I'm sure he will never recover. And one thing that we don't talk about is the horrible mental condition that most Iraqis are under. Even people who are not tortured, but just their daily lives are so horrific. Even now, 4 years after the invasion, there's no electricity for much of the time. They still don't have clean running water. They're reporting 40% unemployment there, but I think it's more like 80%. And it hasn't improved. The companies that are getting businesses, contracts there are not the Iraqi companies. They're still Western companies, primarily American companies. And so there's no way to make a living. There's no electricity. There's no water. There's no way to buy food every time you go out of the house. Even when you're in your own home, you're under danger of being bombed at any minute. So the mental condition of people is horrible, especially children.
And just as a side note, yeah, we're going to focus today on the impact of the Iraq on the families, the impact of the war on the families in Iraq. But let me also mention, we reported that the majority of the people that were tortured were never interrogated. There was no intention of getting any information about out of any of them. This is by our troops and by the people under our watch, including at Gitmo. They take them, they torture them, they don't interrogate them. We're not getting any useful information. And, of course, was reported recently there has been a lot of confessions by that gentleman who talk about in a minute. In any case, and his information was found to be not that accurate. So torture doesn't really accomplish anything there.
Well, scholars who study torture say that it inevitably gives false information. Almost
and
always.
And any court would throw it out anyway.
False information.
I mean, you know, if anything under duress, if you sign a contract with somebody with a gun to your head, that's not a valid contract. Never was.
Well, that depends on the court.
Yeah, okay, there you go.
I wouldn't necessarily.
All right, so you met with lots of families, and I understand some were in professors associated with universities and schools,
yes.
Right? Some were with hospitals and healthcare? Is that true too? Or
well, the professional class, especially professors and students, are being targeted more and more now. And in fact, one of the most brilliant, wonderful people I know, a young man who was a third-year medical student, had to drop out of medical school last year because the attacks on students were getting so bad. So professors and students and translators especially are being targeted, and healthcare workers.
Just the people that are most important that you'd want to keep. And let me just mention, this is WSLR 96.5, Low Power FM in Sarasota, Florida. Also reported recently in Democracy Now! By Amy Goodman was the number of people trying to flee Baghdad and the difficulty they're having.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead, tell us some stories.
I'm working
there
with a lot of Iraqis who are trying to get out of the country, and their situation is so dire, it's so desperate. Well, just among the families that I interviewed almost 2 years ago now at the border of Jordan, everybody was trying to get out of Iraq. Almost every single person I spoke with had either witnessed a killing of a friend or family member or neighbor, or had been threatened. Excuse me. And several families had just that morning thrown the kids in the car, thrown whatever they could fit in the car, and taken that god-awful drive through the desert on it's about a 12-hour drive through the desert under pretty bad circumstances. You have to go through Ramadi and Fallujah and then through the desert on what they call the most dangerous road in the world to get to the border of Jordan. And when they get to the border, there's no guarantee that they're going to be permitted in. And if they are permitted in, they get a 90-day visa, and then they have to leave the country. Leave Jordan, go back to Iraq or go to Syria, and then come back in again. So every 90 days they have to come back and try to reapply for a visa. Now, Jordan and Syria are both overflowing with Iraqi refugees, and no other country is taking them here. It's a terrible crisis. It's a terrible humanitarian crisis that nobody is talking about. And one of the things I'll be talking about tonight in my talk at the Friends Meeting, Sarasota Friends Meeting, is a family that I've been working with, a young man that George Sapio, my husband, and I met during our first trip to Iraq, which was 5 weeks before the invasion in January and February of 2003. We met this lovely young man who worked in a coffee shop that we visited every day, quite a lot. We did a lot of coffee drinking. And we went back looking for him in the summer of 2003. We couldn't find him. Eventually, thanks to the internet, I found him online, and I ended up talking. I've been talking to him pretty much daily ever since. Well, he had fallen in love, and he was working as a translator for the U.S. coalition forces and has worked pretty much steadily ever since then. So 3.5 years he was a translator. Last April, the U.S. Congress, in its infinite wisdom, passed a law allowing 50 Iraqi translators to seek asylum in the United States. Well, it turned out it wasn't 50 translators. It was 50 people connected to translators. So he now has a wife and two children, so they count as four of those 50 people. Out of the thousands and thousands of Iraqis who have worked for the coalition since the invasion, the Congress only saw fit to allow 50 people to apply for asylum here.
And we were reporting that there's a tremendous shortage of the translators. This is one of our biggest failings. How can we do any kind of diplomatic solution there, get to know them? Now the United States government had finally admitted that we're in the middle of a civil war. Just came out in the news the other day. Of course, we've known that for quite a while. The translators are going to be the key to that. And also tied up in this is the military's view on gays. And we heard General Pace come out with his awful comments, how homosexuality was immoral. And here, what they did is they kicked out the gays in the military, or at least the don't ask, don't tell. Many of the translators, well, were gay, and now we've kicked them out of the military, and there's a tremendous shortage of translators. This goes to the heart of accomplishing what we're trying to accomplish in the area.
Right, and there's no real cultural training for the soldiers. They have no idea. They don't speak the language. They don't understand the culture.
Right. Force is not the answer. And we reported last week when a young officer who's getting sent over there asked about what the rules for engagement were. His commanding officer said, if it looks like the enemy, shoot it and kill it. And he said, no, that's funny. What do I really do? And he said, no, that's what you really do. So we have not a clue, really, as to what's going on there. Let me just also ask you a question, and that it was reported that it's not so easy to leave Baghdad, but for other reasons that are not so obvious. Yes, it's hard to get across the border to get everything together, but if it's hard to sell things. For example, a gentleman was saying that he had several cars. He tried to sell them, the new cars. Nobody's buying because everybody's selling. Plus, as soon as they figure out that you're going to leave, many people, they have cash in their hand, they've sold all their goods, they're trying to get a visa, trying to get a passport, which is almost impossible to do, you have to wait on long lines. But as soon as people realize that they're ready to leave, cash in hand, they kidnap them.
Right.
They take their money because they're vulnerable. Plus, they're leaving anyway, so they're not going to be missed.
Right. The Iraqi people really have, they're just living in a nightmare. It's never ending. And it seems to me that even if everything cleared up today, it would take two or three generations before people really recover because the stress and the strain. And of course, there's no Ritalin there, no Valium and no Zyrtec and
only uranium, depleted uranium.
Right, depleted uranium and oil. But and there's also no mental health care. I mean, they don't have massage therapists and Reiki.
All right, I have a few more questions. How about electricity? How's the electricity there?
It's terrible. Now it's, summer's starting. We were there, it was 135 degrees in the summer.
Ouch.
I can't even describe how hot it was. It's just like having your whole body in an oven all the time.
Part of that heat may be from all the uncontrolled fires burning.
There are uncontrolled fires burning because, of course, there's very little police. It's only military police, and there's no fire departments, and there, because of the heat, because of the electricity shortages, because of the sanctions for the past 14 years, nothing's been kept up, so fires burn out of control.
And then the fires burn, and then you get pollution.
And you get smoke in the air all the time.
The pollution is terrible there.
I still think I have sand and gook in my lungs from 4 years ago.
Probably pieces of depleted uranium, too.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's
and the food situation?
An environmental disaster.
Food?
The food situation, farmers can't get their goods to market. The markets are being blown up. There isn't the kind of supermarket that we have here. I go in the supermarkets here, and I'm always amazed. I just walk down the cereal aisle, and I lose count of how many cereals there are, shampoos and everything like that. And there
we're
you're
so
lucky
comfortable
to
in our soap. Comfort here.
We sure are. We have no appreciation for the way other people live in the rest of the world, and we're so spoiled.
All right. Once again, this is WSLR 96.5 Low Power FM in Sarasota, Florida. Maura Stevens is here. She spent the last 19 years as a journalist, activist, peace advocator, and we're talking about some of the conditions of the Iraqi families as a consequence of our unnecessary war there. So we talked a little bit about some of the educators. How is the education, just the general education for a just salt of the earth Iraqi doing?
Well, I have a beloved 16-year-old friend. I call her my little sister. Her name is Rayam. She lives in Baghdad. I've known her for 4 years now. She was 12 when we met her. And I talk to her two or three times a week. Life is very hard for kids in Iraq. Of course, when school is not in session, it's deadly dull because they're basically trapped inside the house. And She's fortunate because her family has a generator. Actually, they have two generators, and her father spends most of his time keeping them running or trying to make sure that they have enough gasoline to keep them running because there isn't regular electricity. So when she's online from her home, she's one of the few people I can talk to from home. Most of them have to go to an internet cafe. She's bored out of her gourd. You know, the only thing she can do for amusement is play games online or try to get online when the electricity is working. And when she's in school, she studies French, English, Arabic, Islamic, theological studies, mathematics, science. She seems to have a lot more classes than most American kids do. But school is out of session a lot because there are bomb threats and there are people being killed all the time. So it's very broken up. Their school life is very broken up. Yet she studies hard.
All right. Also, I wanted to ask you about the general infrastructure of Iraq, the roads, the buildings, and also the availability for jobs for those Iraqi contractors who are trying to get a piece of the action. Basically, Halliburton and Bechtel have gotten most of the contracts for, well, billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars. So how much of that money is trickling down going to the Iraqis, and is there any problem with the Iraqis in terms of paperwork getting those jobs, filling out forms or any type of red tape?
Oh, yes. As far as I can tell, very few Iraqi contractors are getting any work toward rebuilding their own country. When we were there, we witnessed a really horrific job contract free-for-all with the Bechtel operator who was interviewing Iraqi companies to take jobs rebuilding hospitals, roads, bridges, and the airport, the Baghdad airport. And basically it was a sham. None of the companies that came in to try and get contracts were awarded contracts. And these people were desperate.
Say that again. How many?
Zero. Zero.
Like, as in none? Like, not one of them?
Not one of them got any.
Because I understand that there was problems. There was forms to be filled out. You had to get insurance and those types of things.
Which they didn't
even have
in Iraq.
Difficult.
Right.
You're saying it's impossible.
It was impossible at that time. And the only people that I know who are employed are working as cab drivers and translators. Nobody that I know, and I'm regularly in touch with about 24 or 28 Iraqis, none of them, including several engineers.
So you're still in touch with them?
Oh, yes, daily.
Through the internet?
Daily, yes, through the internet. Okay. Thank goodness for the internet. And almost all of them have to go to internet cafes, so it's irregular. I get to talk to them when they're free or when they're able to get to the internet. But I do talk to at least two or three Iraqis every day.
All right, so putting ourselves in the shoes of an Iraqi, an innocent Iraqi store owner, any number of things could be causing their lives to just come apart.
Well,
loss of life and food and electricity, education, water, I imagine.
Water is
a big problem there, too.
Contaminated for the most part. When it runs, people have to stockpile water, and the water is not clean. So, you know, people have a lot of intestinal problems and a lot of health problems.
Speaking of health problems, one of the things we've been reporting is about depleted uranium. And we had on the Beyond Treason folks here, Joyce Riley, and she was telling us, and others as well, when you have the levels of depleted uranium rising in a population, because the depleted uranium is in every bullet, it's in every bomb, dropped probably over 3,000 tons of depleted uranium.
That's right.
They are so far and growing rapidly. And we reported that there were reports of birth defects, Iraqi girls getting breast cancer and other types of cancers that have never been seen in that population before. Did you see any of that? Was there any talk of any type of depleted uranium fallout?
Well, there was an awful lot of depleted uranium from the 1991 war. So a lot of that had already been in the soil and in the air and in the water. And yes, we saw an awful lot of horrific, bizarre cancers before
you
the
did.
Invasion.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know if anybody is tracking that. Again, part of the problem.
Maybe Dr. Caldicott working on that. Helen Caldicott.
I imagine she is. She's the anti-nuclear proliferation guru.
Pediatrician.
She's wonderful.
Yep.
Wonderful.
Wonderful. She's spoken around here several times.
But I don't think there, as far as I know, there's no long-term study that's been going on in Iraq, and part of the problem is before the invasion, of course, under Saddam Hussein, nobody was allowed in to do that kind of scientific study, and I don't know what's being done now. I don't know. I suspect that, it's fairly obvious to anybody who has a brain without a scientific study that people who are living without clean water and without proper access to nutrition and without electricity are suffering in a lot of health ways, even if it's not a scientific study. It's fairly obvious. Now, and again, the mental health is... I can't imagine living under that kind of stress every day, what people are undergoing. I do know a dear friend of mine, actually the father of the young girl that I was just talking about, brilliant man, educated at the University of New Mexico, got his PhD. He's an engineer, absolutely brilliant. He could talk on any subject, totally fluent English. You wouldn't even know he was an American. Could talk on literature, science, philosophy. Wonderful man that George and I spent a lot of great time with. Over the course of the first couple of years after the invasion, he spent all his time making one generator work, the other generator work. They had two generators. And after about 2 years, he said to me, "I'm imprisoned in my home. I have nothing to talk to my wife about. We sit here all day looking at one another, looking at the walls. I have nothing new to bring to my marriage, and I can see my marriage disintegrating before my eyes." And he now is... almost catatonic because he's so depressed, and his daughter tells me how bad it's gotten. This is an absolutely brilliant man whose life has just gone to hell. And that's just one example of what life in such a stressful situation does to people.
And would you say that's unusual, or would you say that's more typical of what you saw over there?
His brilliance was unusual, and his kindness and his decency was not. So I'd say that unemployed men can go several ways. They can withdraw into themselves like that. I mean, he feels very useless. He can't get work. Or you can become militant and angry and take your... frustrations out in violence, and I think that's what's happened to an awful lot of people.
Have you seen any militant organizations sort of stepping up to the plate and recruiting these disenfranchised owners and
sure.
taking them in? I mean, they're fodder for recruitment for these militia groups. I mean, what better person? I mean, that person is an ideal recruit, right?
Yes.
Maybe a little too smart, but if you take a couple of IQ points away, or maybe not even, you hand him a gun, you know, probably convince him to do anything.
I think that's happened to thousands and thousands of young Iraqi men, who otherwise would be law-abiding family people.
So let's kind of put this in perspective. This is an obvious question, but I like to do sometimes state the obvious. Would you say that our war effort in Iraq has had an impact and made less terrorists in the world or more terrorists in the world?
Many, many more.
Yes, and that's what we see time and time again. And you say you've seen it firsthand there, or at least the appearance that might be happening, I should say.
Yes, I mean, I think it's inevitable. There are so many things that the United States did wrong. First of all, Well, the situation in Iraq is a combination of a lot of things. But first of all, Saddam Hussein emptied the jails in October of 02. So lots of criminals were just, you know, the skeeviest people in the world were just thrown out in the streets again. Then the United States let the Saddam Hussein's army go without even taking their identification cards. Or their guns. You know, so they were all thrown out in the streets. The borders were opened up. Angry people from Kuwait and Iran, who had lots to be angry at Iraq about for the two wars, were, you know, pouring into the country, and criminals of all sorts were pouring into the country, and mercenaries of all sorts, people who were trying to make a buck off the Iraqi people. So that fomented by, you know, Americans raiding houses in the middle of the night for no apparent reason, making people angrier and angrier.
Including a relative of one of the Iraqi officials was arrested, and then later on we had to apologize. Again, from our rules of engagement, if a private thinks that somebody is an enemy, shoots them, arrests them, whatever, doesn't ask any questions, that's our rules of engagement. It's just a setup for making mistakes.
Here's a horrible story, and it's not atypical. A young man that I met at the border, again in 2005, told me about what happened to his younger brother. There were six children in the family. They were all adults. The youngest one was 16. They were living at home, as is typical for Iraqi families. They're very close-knit. It was the youngest brother's turn, the 16-year-old brother's turn to go out and get the gasoline. And to get gasoline, they normally have to wait about 12 hours. So they go out at night, after dark, before midnight, and wait in line until the gas pumps open in the morning. And the gas pumps only work as long as the electricity is working. It's a big catch-22 there with gasoline. You can't pump gasoline without electricity, and you can't run generators without gasoline.
Yes, we've heard that, yes.
So the young brother went out. He called a friend, two friends, who were going to wait with him overnight in the car, in the line for the gasoline. So they drove across town to get in line for gasoline. This was around midnight. Apparently, some American soldiers who had a tank were bored, and they drove over an embankment right where this young man was waiting with his car in a line of other cars, and crushed his car with the three men in it. Two of the young men got out. Their legs were crushed. They got out. They couldn't believe that this was happening, and they got out just watching this tank come over an embankment and just basically drive over their car with the three men in it. And my friend's brother was killed, but the other two men survived with their lives, but they were crushed from the waist down. When you witness things like that time and again, it's pretty hard to just turn the other cheek.
Do we know, were those U.S. Army troops or were those contractors? Do we know who they were?
They were U.S. Army troops.
U.S. Army.
Nobody was ever prosecuted for this crime.
And well, of course not. With the rules for engagement, there's nothing wrong with what they did. That's kind of sanctioned by our government in terms of what's coming up from the top down.
Right, and again, Iraqis aren't people.
Yes, and also we have ever-increasing number of prisoners, ex-cons, and also neo-Nazis in the United States being recruited into the army with shady backgrounds, people that are obviously going to go over there and are going to be more susceptible to doing bad things. And these are essentially our ambassadors over there, because that's what people see. Let me again just mention, Maura Stevens is in the studio here. She's an activist, has been for many years, journalist. This is WSLR, Low Power FM in Sarasota, Florida, 96.5. I'm dying to just switch gears and ask you about Seymour Hersh, because he's just was a shining beacon over the years. Thank goodness.
Yes, he's one of my heroes. I was fortunate a couple of weeks ago to meet one of my other heroes, Robert Fisk. Are you familiar with his work? He writes for The Independent and the British.
And we rely on the British for BBC, The Guardian, Independent for things that just never, the Downing Street memos, never saw it here in the United States.
Absolutely.
Huge news over there.
And Robert Fisk is probably the greatest journalist working in the Middle East, American or British journalist working in the Middle East, I should say. He's been living in Lebanon for 31 years, so he lived through the entire Lebanese invasion. And I relied on him and Seymour Hersh and Juan Cole and Dar Jamal. When I first started learning about Iraq, those were the four people that I learned the most from. Dar Jamal is, Dar Jamal, DaharJamail.com. He's an American working in the Middle East, and he's written an awful lot about Iraq. I learned a lot from him, as well as from, of course, my Iraqi friends, but those were the four great influences. And Seymour Hersh,
what's he like?
In person?
Yeah.
He's actually
Any tidbits
he's
you have
funny.
On him, he's a hero of mine, so.
Is he? Yeah, mine too. He's got a good sense of humor. I guess you have to when you're,
We try to.
Spending, yeah, I know, I told you, I warned you I wasn't, was death at parties. Although I do have a joke in honor of St. Patrick's Day. I'll have to try to remember it. Anyway, he's terrific. He gave a talk at Ithaca College where I work last year, and he's very generous with his time. He was terrific with the students. They loved him, and he's got a healthy ego, as you might expect, but he deserves to.
Now, he wasn't always with The New Yorker, right?
Right.
So
I can't tell you his CV, though. I don't know.
All right, because he was fired from the Times, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember the story.
And for a while, he didn't have a place to go, and then The New Yorker picked him up. It just shows you how, I don't know what the word is, but, The New York Times, a bag of worms there.
Well, I don't have television, but thanks to YouTube, I've discovered Keith Olbermann.
Keith
have
Olbermann,
you seen him?
Yes.
Boy, apparently he's on, what is it, MSNBC or CNN, one of those corporate TV things. But anyway,
He has 360, I'm not sure, I think it's CNN. But
One of those corporate TV stations. Anyway, he's terrific. And he's, apparently, his rating, he's bringing the ratings up. So you can be a liberal. I'm not sure if he's a liberal, but he's certainly critical of the U.S. Administration. So he's doing very well.
Yeah,
and
he made his name with his Katrina reporting.
Oh,
that's
okay.
How he kind of got on the map. He
cried
on TV, and his ratings have been going up ever
right?
since.
Well, he slams Bush daily. So.
All right, so we have about 7 minutes left or so. We'll get. Let's do some just general news items, and you're welcome to comment on those other news related items. If you're out there streaming, somebody said they had a difficult time streaming in Philadelphia. If you know somebody in Philadelphia that was trying to listen, however, I did check the stream this morning and it was working okay. If there's any difficulty or if there's any parts of this show that you want to hear later on, it will be podcast on our webpage at thisrealnews.com. It'll also be on iTunes and very easily available, and Maura Stevens will also be giving the link so she can give it out. Let's do some security items here. The House overturned a Bush order which allowed former presidents to keep their papers secret indefinitely. So here's what R. Bush did. R. Bush allowed President George W. Bush.
George H.W. Bush.
George.
Daddy?
H.W. Bush. Right. To keep his papers secret. You wonder what he's trying to cover up from his daddy there. In any case, the House, by a 333-93 vote margin, passed a veto-busting measure. That is, it's immune from vetoes because it's more than the two-thirds needed to overturn that, which would give much wider access to government information. So
oh, that's
people
great.
Like yourselves
can that's
get
wonderful.
More stuff about what's been going on.
It's been harder to get information from the Freedom of Information Act lately than
yes, this
administration than
has not exactly been transparent.
Hmm. Well, that's good news.
Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you about in the security news, six American Islam imams sued U.S. Airways after being removed from a flight. This was reported in CNN March 13th, but the story goes back to an earlier story. There were six Americans, they were Islam, they were praying on board. It was the whatever time, appropriate time, I don't have the details mm-hmm. in front of me there. And some people on the plane freaked out. They had them removed from the plane. And now the U.S. Airways is being sued for violation of their rights.
Oh, I didn't hear that at all.
So not only is this war affecting the Islamic and the Muslim people in Iraq, we reported that's just awful. Maybe couldn't be worse. But it's also affecting, to a serious degree, the Muslims here in the United States and throughout the world. There was also the Canadian gentleman who he was flying through Canada. He was on a U.S. list. He was arrested. He was sent to Syria and tortured for 6 months. He was on Democracy Now.
Yes.
It was just awful stuff happening to him. And now he's suing the Canadian government over that. It doesn't seem like the governments are really protecting our people and leaving the governments themselves open to litigation.
Oh, sure.
And
Muslims are being, systematically harassed throughout the country, even by their neighbors.
All right, so let's talk about Halliburton, which was in the news, too. And we talked about contractors in Iraq and how it was difficult to get contracts from Bechtel. And many people here in the United States, conservatives, say, well, we should be supporting Halliburton. There's nothing wrong with Halliburton getting those billions, hundreds of billions of dollars in contracts, and even losing billions here and there. At least it's American money. Not anymore. Halliburton moved its headquarters. Did you hear?
No, I didn't.
One of the worst places you could think of? Dubai.
Really?
The Arab Emirates.
Headquarters is in
Halliburton is now headquartered in Dubai, according to the Associated Press, March 11th.
Interesting.
It's shifting its headquarters from Houston to the Middle East. And, of course, Halliburton is responsible for many, many of our most serious security issues throughout the world.
Yes.
Any comments there? The chairman says Dubai was going to run the company. And, of course, Dubai and United Arab Emirates, it's interesting because the companies owned by Dubai are state-owned companies. For example, when Dubai was going to take over our ports here in the United States, we made a big deal of that, mm-hmm. not because if it was just a company, whatever it was, the world, I forgot what the name of it is, but it was a company that was involved with World Ports International or something. But because that company was owned by the state of the United Arab Emirates and Dubai, and we didn't want to have a foreign state like Arabs controlling our security, like in our ports, like duh.
So Dick Cheney's company is going to be in
so Dick Cheney
Dubai.
Now works for the Arabs officially. He gets to the tune of, I think it's $750,000 every year still from them. It was $1 million at one point. I think it's a little bit less than that. Still getting checks from them, and now
and
we're,
that's perfectly okay with much of America, I guess.
With those uninformed Americans, it seems to be okay. Personally, I have some problems with that. I don't think we should be allowing our security in their hands. I had a problem with these ports. Having unsecured ports, I think, is a big no-no.
Yes, and I think we're not paying attention to that at all. The so-called war on terror is suffering.
Maura, say some closing remarks for us. We may do a little bit more and run over a little bit, but let me give you a minute here at the end. This is WSLR 96.5, low power FM in Sarasota, Florida. Maura Stevens.
Well, I'd like to encourage people to come out to tonight's talk at Sarasota Friends Meeting at 57th and Lockridge on the northwest corner, and to support the peace work that's being done here in Sarasota. there's a lot of work to do. I don't think people should waste their time signing petitions to George W. Bush. It's a total waste of time. Don't bother. Put your effort somewhere else. Write letters to the editor. Write letters to your congresspeople, but don't bother writing to the White House.
Okay, and also, thank you, Maura.
Well, thank you for having me, Steve.
And also, please support WSLR. We had a fun drive. We had some technical difficulties. We're going to start it up again, I believe, on the 19th. But if you want to support this radio station, 894-6469 is the number to call. 894-6469. That's area code 941 for those of you that are podcasting or webcasting out of state. There's lots more that we could report, but we are out of time. Next week, Peter Dunn is going to be our guest. He has a web page, a website, similar to some of the other sites that we use, where he's reporting a summary of the news, and we're going to be talking to him about why he did that and what he's accomplishing. This show uses the Huffington Post for a lot of its material. We want to thank the Huffington Post and also Peter Dunn and his website, Daily Source. .com or .org. It goes to the same one either way. He's very good. We also want to mention that these views are not those of WSLR. It's volunteers. It's board. These views are diverse. They're unedited. And they're different than the views you're going to get. We try to report underreported items and promote peace and justice here. And what better person to do that than with Maura Stevens, who's here.
Way to go, Steve.
She's also going to be talking tomorrow, that's Saturday, at 1 o'clock at the Marina Jax Park here for a peace rally. And be sure to come and hear Maura Stevens tell about some of the impact of the war on families in Iraq. Maura, thank you once more.
Thank you, Steve. It's been delightful.
And we will podcast those for those of you that were not able to hear us so that you can hear it later. Here's some music to go out with.
Wow.